Good morning. I'm a reader, so forgive me. Otherwise, I'd go blank. And I think Danny stole my notes because he basically gave my message. So amazing. Anyway. Okay. A few years ago, I was browsing the internet in an attempt to gain a deeper understanding of how different communities talk about people with disabilities, and specifically about Down syndrome, as we have a little girl with Downs. The most beautiful words sprang up at me off the Chabad website, interestingly enough, written by Rabbi Tzvi Freeman in answer to a tormented mother who was carrying yet another child, this time with Down syndrome. She was feeling overwhelmed by her brood already and asked the rabbi whether it would be wrong to abort this child. This was his answer. You ask about the soul of this child. Before this child was conceived, her soul stood in the lofty place of souls above, higher than the angels, basking in serene spiritual ecstasy beyond any pleasure we could imagine in this material world. Why did she choose to leave that paradise to descend to a physical body in a world full of pain and confusion? What could she accomplish here? Since this will be the soul of a child who will need special care and who will know the world differently than others, she has a special mission. She's chosen to ignite the kindness that lies dormant in people's souls and plant the seeds of empathy in their hearts to teach caring, patience, and tolerance in a way that no other teacher could. She will enter the world armed with lessons and tests for all who will come to know her. And she will leave it a much kinder world, a world blossoming with compassion, a world where people can feel for one another and put aside their own concerns and comfort to run to help. She will leave behind a touch of the heaven from whence she came. A few years ago, I was up here sharing about my journey as a mother of a child with Down syndrome. I presented a lot of information on these amazing individuals and how hard they need to work to achieve those things that come to most of us quite easily. Our Kylie is now 4.5. She has been through more therapy in her short life than most of us will ever need in a lifetime. We have had successes and setbacks, and we continue to plug along with our eyes set on the next goal, not really knowing when we will reach it. Speech, toileting, learning, self-help skills, these are all areas and challenges we think about every day. And it is easy to be focused on these, maybe even weighed down by them. But if I'm honest, these challenges and the work that they require probably occupy less than 20% of my thoughts. These are not what define our life today with Kylie or Kylie herself, our very spunky, independent, fearless, playful, stubborn, and joyful four-year-old. In fact, there is so much more to Kylie and to doing life with her. She has been a teacher in empathy, caring, and compassion. She's a gift, and that's our family. The journey we have been on of welcoming Kylie into our lives and loving her to the very best of our ability is a journey we are on with all of our children. We are learning how to love each one of them, imperfections, brokenness, and all. And they are each a gift and a teacher to us. But beyond that, it is actually a micro picture of the greater journey we are on of receiving welcome ourselves in a place where we are the broken ones and where broken people with broken bodies, hearts, spirits, and relationships take up most of the view seen by our mortal eyes. The greater journey is the one that God takes us on into a place of his welcome, into a place where everything that defines us and everyone around us in this earthly sphere is shed, and we're left to wonder at and bask in our belovedness and the belovedness of those around us. I'm gonna do this. So back in Kenya, where we live and work, I am a teacher of English language learners, students who are admitted into our school with low-level English. One of my Chinese students, Martin, joined the school in sixth grade, and by ninth grade, he was still struggling and reading at a second grade level. He was sandwiched between two very smart siblings who only needed our ELL services for 1 year and who were excelling despite learning English late in the game. The Chinese culture is an honor culture, and Martin's parents were ashamed of him. He was a major disappointment and a dishonor to the family, and he heard this message of shame from them over and over again. It didn't help that Martin spent his days in an academically rigorous school where his weaknesses stood out. By the middle of ninth grade, Martin was lethargic and had given up on himself. After failing chronically, despite all of our efforts to help, Martin was not making progress and he was numb, maybe even dead on the inside. Another one of my Chinese students, Thomas, joined us in seventh grade. 5 weeks into the school year, Thomas and his mother were the victims of a terrible terrorist attack in Nairobi. Thomas lost his mother and was badly injured. His father, who was already absent and hardened, became even more so, and the aunt he ended up living with after that was a workaholic and very unnurturing. Needless to say, Thomas was traumatized and deeply broken. Narcisse, bless you, supported Thomas for very many months by sending funds for therapy. My classroom was a great place to meet and interact with hurting individuals like Martin and Thomas. On the home front, things were not much easier. One of our children, who will remain nameless for now, and I want to make sure they're not here, okay, was depressed and excruciatingly unmotivated when it came to school. When we finally decided to seek help, we learned that our child had ADHD, depression, and ODD, oppositional defiance disorder. Though there was relief in receiving a diagnosis and getting on a path to recovery and healing, I knew deep down that the damage was deeper than anything we could fix with a recommended plan for remediation. At the core, our child believed that they were stupid and worthless, and that that was just who they would remain for the rest of their lives. I won't leave you hanging and tell you that my students' stories don't end there and that their endings at this point in time are quite hopeful. Thank God. At home, we are doing better too, though there is never a day without challenge. But to this day, I struggle with guilt over how little it seems I can do to help my broken students, or even more painful, my own children. And for that matter, I struggle with a deep knowledge that I'm not truly loving anyone well. Not family, not friends, neighbors, students, and even my pets, and that's true. Let's face it, I feel like a failure every day. And I am. I am a failure. Enter Jesus. And here is where I'd like to pause and let us soak up that name, that essence, that person. For it is in this name, in this mystery, the presence of this person, that peace and hope begin to poke their head out through a dark cloud. And I bask in this for a moment. It's a good moment because it takes me outside of myself, but it doesn't last long because then my mind begins to work, analyze, question again. And as my life comes back into focus, I feel the cloud, the mugginess of my mind and my heart settle back on me. I come face to face with my own demons and limitations. If I let him back in and listen carefully, Jesus often speaks in these moments. First, five simple words. You are my beloved, Danya. I quiet my mind to all other noises and soak up this love, this one truth that I have no doubts about. It is amazing that when I do and when I'm ready, Jesus continues speaking, but not in an audible voice. It usually comes in pictures. A picture of one or two of my students, my children, my husband, a friend or family member who is struggling, a suffering community somewhere in the world, all broken people, all people I have failed to love well. And the call is clear. See them as I see them, he says. I love them. Now let me love them through you. In his book, The Life of the Beloved, Henry Nouwen says this. Oh, and Evan, you can put that up for me. When we claim and constantly reclaim the truth of being the chosen ones, we soon discover within ourselves the deep desire to reveal to others their own chosenness. That is the great joy of being chosen, the discovery that others are chosen as well. In the house of God, there are many mansions. There is a place for everyone, a unique, special place. Once we deeply trust that we ourselves are precious in God's eyes, we are able to recognize the preciousness of others and their unique places in God's heart. We took a sabbatical year this last year, as Danny mentioned, and spent it in Canada with Wes's family. Since I'm not a citizen or resident there, I couldn't work, so I decided to further my studies. Coincidentally, as I studied educational inclusion and working with exceptional learners, which is becoming my passion, we had simultaneously put Kylie, our daughter with Down syndrome, into mainstream public school for the first time. The public school system in Canada is not perfect by any means, but there is one thing done well that has left a deep impact on us as Kylie's parents, and that is the foundational and firm belief that every student belongs with his or her peers in the classroom. Recent research has taught us that the mainstream classroom with the proper supports is the most optimal place for students with special needs. So the motto in Canadian schools is, each belongs. Not just included, not just integrated, but belongs in this classroom, just as each individual belongs in society. Now, as an educator, I know this is not simple, and many schools are still struggling to figure out how to do inclusion well. But this is still the fundamental belief, and it is this ethos that drives everything else. The training teachers are receiving, how funds and other resources are being used, and what students are entitled to at school. This is the environment that Kylie entered into a year ago. No questions asked about whether or not she deserved to be there or whether or not the school had the capability of taking her and serving her needs. Kylie belonged first, and all pedagogy matched itself to this mindset. This being our first experience with Kylie in school and with inclusive education, we didn't really know what to expect, though we hoped for the best, and we were completely blown away. The teachers immediately began to get to know her and learn about her areas of strength and how to capitalize on these for her learning, as well as set goals for her in areas of personal challenge. Kylie was nudged to take risks. She even received an award for this, and was celebrated for her successes. Kylie was seen and welcomed for who she was. But they even went further than that. For the love of Kylie and of the class community, one of Kylie's teachers worked on teaching the students sign language so that communication with Kylie was made easier and the playing field was leveled even more. If spoken language was an obstacle to creating a deep and loving community within the classroom, if having only one means of communication meant that someone was being excluded and therefore not being given the opportunity to thrive, then by golly, the class would learn sign language. And why not? In this classroom of little people, the highest value was not placed on how high students could count, whether or not they knew all of the alphabet, or how many sight words they could read. In this classroom, valuing each and every member of the community and working together to make sure each one knew they belonged and had an equal chance to thrive was the highest value taught and modeled. And so, Kylie was well-loved. But naturally, it doesn't end there, and obviously, it was not only Kylie who benefited from this experience. Countless times, we were told that having Kylie as part of the class community had enriched the students' lives and experiences, and that of the class as a whole. This community was made better, more mature, compassionate, and whole because of Kylie's presence. In the words of Rabbi Freeman, Kylie left behind in that little classroom a much kinder world, a world blossoming with compassion. She left behind a touch of the heaven from whence she came. My studies about inclusive education were incredibly exciting and inspiring, but they paled in comparison with Kylie's daily experience, which I had the privilege of observing. This was theory. This wasn't theory, sorry. This was action, love in action. I honestly believe that Kylie's teachers were living out the love of God in the work that they had chosen to do. This was Jesus' work. I could read about this kind of behavior in my textbooks until I turned blue in the face, but no words on a page impacted me as deeply or transformed my life as being involved in my daughter's very real experience of inclusion and belovedness. Henry Nouwen says this too in his book, Life of the Beloved. Yes, there is that voice, the voice that speaks from above and from within, and that whispers softly or declares loudly, "You are my beloved. On you, my favor rests." It certainly is not easy to hear that voice in a world filled with voices that shout, "You are no good, you are ugly, you are worthless, you are despicable, you are nobody," unless you can demonstrate the opposite. Forgive me. God declares us his beloved, though our broken world tries to refute that and make us feel the shame of our brokenness. Or we are told we have to earn it through correct doctrine or a set of rules we should live by. This has been my Pharisaical trap. Have I arrived at the right place where Jesus can actually reach me? Our experiences are much more likely to look like that of Martin, shame and hopelessness, because we simply can't reach that place. Not Kylie's, that of immediate welcome and love, no matter our achievements. We may read in the Bible about our belovedness, or we may have heard about it our entire life, but never really have had a full experience of it, because we tell ourselves or are told in some way or other that we are undeserving. Like I said, this has definitely been much of my experience. And so, in the last year, I have challenged myself to spend more time absorbing the words of Jesus and seeking a deeper experience of him and his love. Though a Christian my entire life, always surrounded by incredible biblical scholarship and strong believers, I'm only now beginning to get glimpses of what it means, what it meant, and what it means each day anew that Jesus is Emmanuel, that he came to us, to me, that he comes to me each day, that he chases me down, fights till I'm found, wherever that might be, if I will have him, that being his beloved means that there is no shadow that he won't light up, no mountain he won't climb up coming after me. There's no wall he won't kick down, lie he won't tear down coming after me. There's no formula or act of initiation needed, no way to earn this love. There's only allowing him to love me in my brokenness. John says, this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. That the God of the universe would chase me down to make me his beloved through his own suffering is mind-blowing. There's no higher form or standard of love than this. But it never stops there. John goes on to say, dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. There is no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. And this is worth repeating. If we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. But the one who fears is not made perfect in love. Children like Kylie were feared and excluded from society, even from the church, for thousands of years because of outward blemishes, because they were different. They didn't fit the mold. There are many other categories of people that have been or still are excluded from society, the church, and even from relationship with us because of our fear and our mortal judgments. But this is not the way of Jesus, who claimed that even he did not come to judge, but to save. Judgment is never ours to claim, but mercy is. In Jesus' family, there is room for everyone. And I believe that at his table, there is room for every type of believer. We are family. We're not called to agree with each other, but to love one another. And love is always self-sacrificial. If love calls us to the furthest extreme of dying for our friends and our foes, it certainly calls us to sacrifice anything else that stands between us and the invitation we extend to others. Who am I afraid to welcome at my table? Who are you afraid to welcome at your table? It is not a set of rules that we follow or one correct theology, liturgy, or law that bring people into an awareness of their brokenness and belovedness. It is God's kindness. It is love. It is Jesus. Some of you may be familiar with C.S. Lewis's book, Till We Have Faces. In this book, which is based on Greek mythology, the main character, Orwal, a princess and later a queen of a place called Gloam, agonizes her entire life over how she feels the gods wronged her, and she writes her complaint against them in the form of a book. However, as her story unfolds, and as she encounters them in a variety of ways, she slowly begins to understand her own flaws and shallow understanding. Just before she dies, Orwell can finally rest as she pens these words. I ended my first book with the words, "No answer from the gods. I know now, Lord, why you utter no answer. You yourself, you are yourself the answer. Before your face, questions die away. What other answer would suffice? Only words, words, to be led out to battle against other words. In a world where darkness abounds, even within the church, where love, inclusion, and unity are not always our highest values, where we each are faced with our own brokenness and that of others on a daily basis, and are not sure where we belong, and in a life where we simply don't have all the answers, be at rest. Jesus fights to find you wherever you are in life or on your spiritual journey. You are his beloved. You are welcome. You belong. We all do. And I'm going to have Evan play this song. Just listen to these words as our closing prayer.